Hey, Robert. Good morning. And Judith?
Yes, Marta.
Hi, Marcia. Helen Burt.
Okay.
Hope you're doing well. Hi, Marcia. Barbara.
Hi, Bonnie.
Good morning. Morning, Tom.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Stephen and Cheryl. Shannon. Sam. Oh, I see Kathy. Hi, Kathleen. Morning, Nancy. And Frank. Hi again, Tom. Let's see. Hey, Susie. Oh, and there's Joanna. And Doug. Good
morning, Stephen and Cheryl.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, Sarah hey, Sutter.
Hi, Marcia.
Yeah. Hi, Shannon Bieber.
Hey, Frank.
Morning, Beth.
Stephen and Cheryl.
Hi, Greg.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Hello, everybody. It's about time to start our service. It is such a delight to be with you. I'm the Reverend Kimberly Debus. I am currently sitting near Saratoga Springs, New York. So it is an utter delight to be with you this morning. We ask that everybody mute themselves, except for those who are speaking. And we'll begin with the words of Gretchen Haley. Let's not go building new walls around our hearts. We already have enough that keeps us from each other, enough that keeps us from ourselves and the knowing of all that we have done, all that has been done to us and for us, the losses we sustained, the love we avoided, the life we held too tight. For this hour, we practice showing up with a willingness to see, to be seen, to remember ourselves whole and still becoming better, to believe it is okay to not be okay, that we are loved even when we feel unlovable, that we belong even when the ground comes out from under us, to be for each other a surprising generosity, a sudden sweetness, a sign of hope, the start of a new day. Together, we can be this brave. Come, let us worship together.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Durango. While being physically together is our greatest desire, we're so grateful to have this option to still be together. I'm Bonnie Miller, today's Volunteer Worship Associate. Our determination to create and uphold community feels essential in this, our hurting world. We create spirituality and community beyond boundaries, working for more justice and more love in our own lives and in the world. We have a covenantal relationship that gives rise to ever becoming people of love and trust. Leading our service with me today, in addition to Anna, is our public guest, the Reverend Kimberly Debus. Reverend Kimberly is a community minister who consults with and teaches congregations how to envision and create artful and creative worship spaces and practices, along with other services supporting worship teams. She is an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister and a member of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Saratoga Springs in New York.
Can I keep from sins? Can I keep from sins?
My life flows on in endless song. Not endless chatter, not endless Zoom meetings, not endless laundry, although, okay, that one's real. But endless song. Something creative, something beyond words, something that transforms us. We all know the song or film or play or painting that touches our souls. It might be the song a parent sang to us when we were scared, or the scene of a movie that speaks our truth, or a favorite sculpture in a museum that is permanently etched in our memory. Or it might be the work of a particular artist whose work you surround yourself with. If I were to ask each of you to describe a moment of worship that has stuck with you, chances are it will be a piece of music or a story or some object used to illustrate a point. So when we think about art that way, they stop being simply objects, a painting, a song, a story, a play. And as musician Brian Eno suggests, they become triggers for experiences that transport us to a time of joy or comfort or ease. Suddenly, it is well with our souls because of art's power, which is mysterious. We can't know for sure what moves us when we see a famous play or painting or dance, but we know the one that captures our attention and makes us wonder and lets us consider our humanness and our connection to the divine and our profound dance with life and our interconnectedness with the world. In fact, we are so moved by the arts, we create artistic places to house and engage them, from the Guggenheim to the Sydney Opera House. We are so moved by the arts that despite our austere Puritan forebears, we cannot help but put art in our places of worship, from stained glass in the windows to paintings on the walls. We are so moved by art, we write songs about art like Mona Lisa, and write songs about artists like Vincent, and entire musicals about art like Sunday in the Park with George. So what is it about art? Poet Elizabeth Alexander writes that art replaces the light that is lost when the day fades, the moment passes, the evanescent extraordinary makes its quicksilver. Art tries to capture that which we know leaves us as we move in and out of each other's lives, as we all must eventually leave this earth. Great artists know that shadow, work always against the dying light, but always knowing that the day brings new light, and that the ocean which washes away all traces on the sand leaves us with a new canvas with each wave. That shadow and light that Alexander talks about isn't just out in the natural world. It is the essence of humanity, and the arts help us see the evanescent in each other and in ourselves, and helps us tell our human stories. Even the most abstract painting is telling some sort of story. And story is what moves us. As Jonathan Gottschall, author of The Storytelling Animal, writes, story continues to fulfill its ancient function by binding society, by reinforcing a set of common values and strengthening the ties of common culture. It defines the people. It tells us what is laudable and contemptible. It subtly and constantly encourages us to be decent instead of decadent. Story is the grease and glue of society. By encouraging us to behave well, story reduces social friction while uniting people around a common value. Story, he concludes, makes us one. The human mind was shaped for story so it could be shaped by story. Science has shown us that when we hear or watch or read story, not only are the language or visual processing parts of our brain activated, but other areas in our brain that we would use when we experience the events of the story in real time are activated too. As science writer Leo Widrich notes, whenever we hear a story, we want to relate it to one of our existing experiences. That's why metaphor works so well for us. While we are busy searching for a similar experience in our brains, we activate a part called the insula, which helps us relate to that same experience of pain or joy or disgust. in safety. Storytelling happens throughout the arts, whether television, film, books, dance, sculpture, comedy, or painting. Our stories emerge. Our stories. Human stories. Sometimes they're joyful stories, but often hard, tragic stories. Art helps us tell our hard human stories in ways that address the untenable without knowing it. The art brings us up against things we have a hard time facing in real time, but never says explicitly, here's the scary part. Rather, art provides a structure that allows us to approach the difficult sideways, to peel off the layers and go just a little deeper each time we engage it. This is especially important as we encounter the stories of people who are not like us, stories from people of color or queer people or immigrants or the disabled or the impoverished. These stories are often difficult to understand if they're not our stories, because they describe experiences we have never and can never have. But artistic structures help us make space so we can approach these difficult stories. Art creates a shared experience through which we can connect and understand in relative safety. As the playwright George Bernard Shaw quipped, without art, the crudeness of reality would make the world unbearable. Or in the words of acting teacher Stella Adler, life beats down and crushes the soul, and art reminds you that you have one. And right now, we need that reminder more than ever. Dr. Kimberly Norris, an authority on confinement and reintegration at the University of Tasmania, says that we've moved from the first quarter of isolation, a time of panic buying and confusion, to the second quarter, the honeymoon, where it felt novel and different as we learned new technology and enjoyed working in pajamas. But now we're in the third quarter, a time of loneliness, unsurety, a time of hollow-eyed stares, brooding, resentment. According to studies of how long humans can survive in space, moods drop somewhere after the halfway point of a mission. And when there's unclarity about when a time of isolation will end, it is even harder, because while there seem to be glimmers of hope, in our case a seemingly flattening curve, the uncertainty of how long this will actually last means that this third quarter could last a really long time. Our moods are suffering. We're getting snippy. We're looking into the future and wondering if and when we can ever celebrate birthdays and holidays, or go on vacation, or attend concerts, and return to worship services in the same physical room with one another. And those long, wistful looks at the calendar bring a sense of futility. We are what is called liminal space, an in-between time. And we're really not that good in these kinds of spaces for very long. Our lives right now are flowing on in endless anxiety, fear, and frustration. If ever there was a time, it is now that we need art. We need the art of theater, which is being streamed from Broadway and the West End and many other locations. We need the art in museums, available in virtual tours, so we can spend minutes or hours in the Louvre or the British Museum or the Met. We need the art of our musicians who are holding online concerts, sometimes weekly. We need the art of our storytellers, books, movies, television, poetry, even story times, all available in our homes, streaming or otherwise online. We need the art of our natural world, too, to immerse in gardens and landscapes. And we need to not just view it, although that helps, but we need to make it. You see, the truth is, we are all artists. Process theology suggests that just as God is both creator and creating, we too are both a part of creation and are creators. And the moments of creation are the true reality. Feminist theologian Carter Hayward suggests that God is nothing other than the eternally creative source of our relational power, our common strength, a God whose movement is to empower, bringing us into our own together, a God whose name in history is love. And as the Reverend Arthur Graham notes, each of us is an artist whose task it is to shape life into some semblance of the pattern we dream about. The molding is not of self alone, but of shared tomorrows and times we will never see. Now, I suspect some of you are thinking, but I'm not an artist. Perhaps you could never really coordinate your feet properly in dance class and you gave up thinking you're a klutz. Perhaps you had a music teacher who suggested it would just be best if you mouthed the words. Perhaps you had an art teacher who fussed because you used the wrong colors. Perhaps you had an English teacher who said your story was uninteresting or your poem was dull. Perhaps, like me, you had a director who told you you ruined the play because really you just couldn't act. We get these horrible, horrible messages often in our childhood that keep us from creating, that keep us from breathing in the smell of paint and makeup and sweat and graphite, that keep us from entering the world and telling our stories through acts of creation. I encourage you, I implore you to create. It doesn't have to be good. It doesn't have to be for public consumption. Write bad poetry that you burn in the grill. Draw awkward pictures on the margins of your notepads. Sing off key in the shower. As the famous quote says, dance as if no one is watching. Engaging in the creation of art, whatever form it takes, gets our creative selves energized to tackle other tasks. Whether it be homeschooling our children for the foreseeable future, or caring for an aging parent, or staying safe and healthy as an essential worker, or more, volunteering for a service organization, or teaching young minds, or dismantling racism, or resisting hates, or reversing effects of climate change. And let me be clear, art and justice are not separate. As Dr. Takiyah Amin said after the death of Aretha Franklin, please, can we not do the "it wasn't just her singing that was legendary, but her activism, blah, blah" framing? Can we understand those things as one and the same, as parts of each other? Can we resist the urge of seeing the creative and performative as somehow separate from the political and impactful? It is all connected. Allowing yourself to be a little artistic will allow you to creatively draw the circle of love ever wider. And in the process, you'll discover a new connection to a part of yourself that reminds you that we all are incredibly human and deeply connected to the divine and each other. We can't let our anxiety about art and the old messages of perfectionism stop us. Even now, more than ever, when the world feels out of control and the problems we face are so big they're paralyzing, we need to create. The Reverend Micah Busey at Judson Memorial in Greenwich Village in New York City offers these words of encouragement. He writes, "Dear curious and creative potential prophets, we're ready for you. Let's be clear. Art doesn't immediately change things. We have to wrap our brains around that, lest we get so full of ourselves. Art doesn't stop violence or erase pain or eradicate evil. It doesn't turn back time or protect bodies. Art doesn't do big things, and that's why no one will sustainably fund it. Art is actually a very small thing that does very small things. It's a gathering of tiny revolutions that sustain the larger ones. Its power comes from being minuscule and undetectable. Art doesn't stop the violence, but it starts the questioning of violence. Art doesn't erase the pain, but it names the pain. Art doesn't eradicate evil, but it tells the stories of another way. It stops time and protects souls because its power is microscopic, and the empire only knows how to deal with things it thinks it sees. You will start to create something today because you feel galvanized, and then you will hate it tomorrow, and then you will think you have nothing to offer, and then you will stop creating for a few days, and then something teensy will spark, and then the whole cycle will start again. This is the reality of tiny things in a world that responds to gigantic, blustery, bloated things. This is the plight of prophecy, and it truly sucks. But my cat just jumped on this keyboard and typed out "nyikt." And if my cat, who stays pretty apolitical most days, is taking this opportunity to use the devastation of this time and create something out of it, I can only imagine the astonishing things you have up your sleeves. May it be so. Amen.